Well, I don't know how well our topic for this evening fits the circumstance. We've been discussing Krishna's childhood pastimes. It's Canto 10, Chapter 11. And the chapter begins with the residence of Nanda Maharaj and the elders of the Brijvasis. They were living for about 3 years, 4 months in Gokul, which is on the eastern side of the river Jamuna. There were disturbances. Putana and Shakatasura and the falling down of the twin Arjuna trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj and various disturbances. So the elders got together and thought it was best to move to a place where they might not have so many disturbances. And so they decided to go to the Vrindavan forest, which is on the western side of the river Jamuna. They had a get together and came to that conclusion, and very quickly they moved. And they settled in a tract of land that was just forest, 16 miles by 8 miles in dimension. And at this, so Krishna and Balaram, they were very, very happy to be in Vrindavan, where there was, from where they were staying, they could see Govardhan Hill and the river Jamuna, the banks of the river Jamuna, and their eternal associates in Vrindavan. So there's a series of activities that were described. Eventually, Krishna and Balaram, they just had some natural affinity for cows, and they went with Nanda Maharaj for the herding of the cows, and they were so enthusiastic, they really wanted to herd the cows. He said, no, you can herd the calves. So they're given charge of the calves. And then there's a very lengthy description of what the cowherd boys would do each day when they go out with the calves. And basically just playing, little boys, what little boys do, although he's the personality of Godhead, mixing with his perfected devotees that had nothing but affinity for Krishna in their hearts and in their minds and in their lives. And with the section of reading from now is in Vrindavan, the first demon that was sent by Kamsa to kill Krishna was Vatsasura. He assumed the form of a calf. Krishna recognized right away he's not one of the calves. And he finished Vatsasura. Then later came Bakasura. So we've been reading about that. And there's a strong emphasis now in the section I'm going to read from. It's on the exalted position of the cowherd boys. Because all the residents of Vrindavan, they have feelings of sweetness. That is to say, they're not so much recognizing his divinity or his Aishwarya opulences, although he demonstrates them from time to time. Their affinity and sweetness of love is so strong that they surpass even those that unders have the highest form of scriptural knowledge and gyan. So that's the section of reading from. It's written by Jiva Goswami called Priti Sandarbha. It is accepted that the cowherd boys had the highest knowledge because by their nature they realized the highest level of sweetness. Thus, even Lord Brahma wanted to have realization of the form of Krishna that the cowherds had realized after seeing Krishna expand into infinite four-armed forms. So you're aware of that pastime, right? Krishna, but Brahma stole the calves and cowherd boys, put them in a cave, right? He came back to see what's Krishna going to do, and much to his surprise, there's for the cowherd boys and the calves. So he went back to the cave, and they were in the cave. So he was really puzzled. He went back to see what's going on, and for each of the calves and each of the cowherd boys, Krishna showed four-armed Narayan form. Surrounding the four-armed Narayan form were all the personified Vedas and all the opulences of Narayan personified in a cacophony of sound, singing Vedic hymns in praise of Krishna. And then other things and other things. And then poof, they all disappeared. It was just Krishna smiling. So then Lord Brahma offered prayers. And this is the first of his prayers. This is chapter 14. O worshipable Lord, I offer my obeisances to you to attain you, Nanda's son, having a body the complexion of a rain cloud, wearing cloth flashing like lightning, with face shining among peacock feathers and gunjaberry decorations, with colorful forest garland, and possessing soft feet, his beauty enhanced by yogurt, rice, stick, horn, and flute. So Brahma's appreciating Krishna's original form in Vrindavan. The creator of the universe is now seeing which is the source of the universe. Since their knowledge, that's the cowherd devotees, since their knowledge was natural and intrinsic to them, their preeti or love never wavered because of other temporary knowledge. Rather, their preeti defeated all other knowledge. Like, for example, Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill or any of the other ways which he showed divine opulences and power. They processed it in such a way that didn't affect their friendship, their parental affection. That this is what this term sweetness is used. The intimacy of affection in a loving exchange. Preeti or affection increases when there are obstacles, just as attraction to the object of love increases with obstacles, even in material affection. Paragraph. Though it is seen that there are faults in the objects of material love, in anuraga, or strong feelings of attachment for the Lord, a person realizes the wonderful qualities of the beloved Krishna very strongly. This is said in Vishnu Purana 1.20.19 in comparing material preeti to preeti for Krishna. Nanda and Yashoda spoke to Balaram. This is the Bhagavatam. This is when O descendant of Dasharatha, O Lord of the universe, may you and your younger brother Krishna protect us. Saying this, they raised Balaram onto their laps, embracing him and moistened him with tears from their eyes. This is Balaram and Krishna in Dwarka. Balaram is insisting that Krishna go from Dwarka and give association to the residents of Vrindavan. And Krishna has different reasons why he's not prepared to go just yet. So Balaram goes. And when Balaram goes to Vrindavan, he is received by Nanda and Yashoda. And they're asking for Krishna and Balaram's protection. Saying this, they raised Balaram onto their laps, embraced him, and moistened him with tears from their eyes. Though it was clear that Balaram was Vasudeva's son, and Balaram was a Kshatriya, and also the Supreme Lord, the two, Nanda and Yasoda, saw him only as their son. This is emphasizing their sweetness. Although they had some recognition of divinity, their love as parental, when parental affection was so strongly, it just eclipsed any divinity perceptions. The first two verses of that chapter. Oh, best of the Kurus, once Balaram, eager to visit his well-wishing friends, mounted his chariot and traveled to Nanda Gokul from Dwarka. Having suffered long the anxiety of separation, the cowherd men and their wives embraced Balaram. The Lord, Balaram, then offered respects to his parents, and they joyfully greeted him with blessings. They just saw him as their son. Even persons who have natural knowledge of opulences, Aishwarya Gyan, overcome this. An example is Devahuti, who has great strength of Preeti. This is, Devahuti is the mother of Lord Kapiladeva. And she's speaking the following verse. Her Kardama Muni, you know the story, Kardama Muni, became married to the daughter of Manu. Swayambhu Manu was the first Manu. He had gone to the forest under the instruction of Brahma to prepare to produce good praja to help fill up the universe Brahma had just created. And so he went to the forest and he realized Lord Vishnu. Vishnu came descending on Garuda, said, I know your heart. Not only you wish to have a son, you wish to have me as your son, I will become your son. But you're going to need a wife, and in 2 days, your wife is going to come. All you have to do is say yes. The husband was Kardama. The wife was Devahuti. She's the daughter of Swayambhu Manu. So they were married. They lived in the forest for tens of thousands of years in Satyayuga. And as a son, Lord Kapila came. Lord Kapila propounded her Sankhya philosophy. So Kardama agreed to marry Devahuti on a condition, and the father accepted the condition that when there's a son of age to maintain your daughter, then I can go back to the forest and live a life of renunciation. So that's what happened. He, Kardama Muni, took permission from his son, knowing that he's the personality of Godhead, and took him back to the forest and performed his meditation. Kapila then gave detailed instructions to Devahuti, and after the whole Sankhya philosophy teaching was presented, he rose and was ready to depart. So now Devahuti is feeling double pain of separation. Her husband's gone, and now soon the personality of Godhead, who is her son, is going to be also gone. So she says, the Bhagavatam says, since her husband had also left home, she became aggrieved with separation from her son, even though she knew the truth. The truth is he's the personality of Godhead. She was like a cow, aggrieved when losing a calf. Or similarly, this is now in the prison house of Kamsa. Krishna has appeared, Vasudeva Krishna, forearm Krishna, son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Devaki is offering her prayer to Vasudeva this way. Oh, killer of Madhu, Sinful Kamsa should not know that you have been born to me. With mind unsteady, because of your mercy, I fear what Kamsa will do to you. Because the eighth child of Devaki was going to kill Kamsa. And here's the eighth child. Now, she's very clear. It's quite irrational. She's very clear. He's the personality of Godhead. He's showing the symbols of Vishnu and everything. Didn't appear like a child normally appears upon birth from the womb of the mother. He is Vishnu. She's afraid what Kamsa might do. That the feeling, the point is, these are examples of the feelings of affection, parental affection, or for the cowherd boys, the intensity of love, when it's beyond majesty, this intensity of rasa is very powerful. Here's another example. Yudhisthira, who had forgotten that Krishna is Bhagavan, Yudhisthira is praised in the following way. Yudhisthira, worrying about enemies, out of affection, engaged an army of four parts, that is to say, when the Kurukshetra battle was over, Yudhisthira was installed, Grandfather Bhishma departed, Krishna is now going to go back from Hastinapur to Dwarka. So he wants to send an army to protect Krishna. He knows he's the personality of Godhead, but he has affection. So he sends an army to protect Krishna. Leading the Pandavas, who were most affectionate, who were afflicted by separation, and who had accompanied him for a long way, Krishna went to Dwarka. Here's another example, Balaram. When Balaram, who is Bhagavan, knower of everything, heard about these preparations of inimical kings, this is Krishna was kidnapping Rukmini. And so Shishupala, Jarasandha, and others were getting their armies to go attack Krishna. Balaram heard. Because he had affection as a brother for Krishna. He heard about these preparations of the inimical kings and how Krishna had set off alone to steal the bride. He feared that a fight would ensue. Immersed in affection for his brother, he hurried to Kundina, that's the capital city of Bhishmaka, with a mighty army consisting of infantry and of soldiers riding on elephants, horses, and chariots. Bhagavan here means that even though being omniscient, he acted this way. Then in this section that we're reading from, chapter 11 of Canto 10, when Balaram and the other boys saw that Krishna had been devoured by the gigantic crane, they fainted, became lifeless, like senses without prana. So Balaram had the power to defeat this Bakasura. He knew Krishna's cannot be destroyed. Still, because of affection, they fainted. Affection, intimacy of love is very strong in the spiritual realm. Though it is established that the knowledge and sweetness has greater happiness, even Shukadeva Goswami was suitably surprised by the good fortune of the cowherds who had surpassed experience of Brahman and Ishvara because of natural attainment of sweetness. So now we're reading from chapter 11. This is a reference to chapter 12. It's a verse that Prabhupada repeated these segments of it, Krita Punya Punja. It's a phrase that means the cowherd boys, who can say how many countless lifetimes of piety they've undergone to now be associated with Krishna in this intimate way. How fortunate. What's the prior qualification of these cowherds? The translation reads, in this way, with an abundance of splendor caused by Krishna, they played with him, who was pure consciousness known as Brahman for the jnanis, who was the Supreme Lord for the devotees with Dasya Bhava, and who was an ordinary human child for those covered by material illusion. And the prior chapter, neither Brahma nor Shiva nor even the goddess of fortune, who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Lord, the deliverer from this material world, such mercy as received by Mother Yashoda. So chapter 9 is also the very, very early childhood pastimes, and obviously Mother Yashoda is a very prominent person. So that chapter, when she opens, Krishna opens his mouth and he sees inside Krishna's mouth the whole universe, the mountains, the trees, the planets, the this and the that, and everything, including Mother Yashoda looking inside Krishna's mouth, inside Krishna's mouth. So everything is there. Because everything is within, the source of everything. And she became bewildered and went through different changes, but finally, whoever he is, he's my little boy, because her motherly affection was so strong. And so then there's a verse spoken by Shukadeva that says, in the Vedas, the highest truth is revealed in this Veda this way, and that Veda that way, and that Veda that way. But Mother Yashoda, she's so advanced, so elevated, that she just sees Krishna as her son. How fortunate is Mother Yashoda. So, the Lord, the son of Yashoda, is not easily available to materialists or to jnanis with realization of Atma, but is easily available to persons with devotion to the son of Yashoda. Then this is now going to Uddhava, when he visits Vrindavan. When Krishna was dancing with the gopis in the Rasa dance, the gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord. This favor was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune, though she was intensely attracted to him, or to other consorts in the spiritual world whose bodily luster and aroma resembled the lotus flower. And what to speak of worldly women? Sometimes the appearance of opulence or Aishwarya in these persons with natural sweetness nourishes that sweetness by astonishment, like, how can her son do such things? Here's an example. Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men felt great happiness when they saw that abode. This is that from the chapter where Nanda Maharaj was the day after Ekadasi, he was preparing to break the Ekadasi fast on the Dwadasi morning. So he took bath in the river Jamuna before the sun rose because it was one of those special arrangements he had to break early. He was kidnapped by one of the agents of Varuna, and the other cowherd men saw him disappear. So they called out, and Krishna heard the call, so he came, and they told what happened. So Krishna plunged into the river Jamuna, went to the abode of Varuna, and there was Nanda Maharaj seated there, and Varuna stood up with all of his opulence of the heavenly realm. He worshipped Krishna, and then turned Nanda Maharaj over to Krishna, so Krishna went back. And when Nanda Maharaj returned, he finished his bath, and they broke the fast and did the rituals for breaking the Ekadasi. And then during the day, the elders, convert men, had a little conversation about what Nanda had experienced. He said, not only was this Varuna's abode opulent beyond anything imaginable, he worshipped Krishna. I saw. He used all that paraphernalia to worship Krishna. So who is this boy? So they started to wonder, maybe he's Narayan. And if he is Narayan, maybe he'll take us to his abode. Maybe he'll show us his abode. They didn't say anything, but Krishna's omniscient, so he knew. So he decided to show him his spiritual abode. So he took them to a particular place, the same place where Kura, when leaving Braja to go to Mathura, he also saw the same thing. Took them to the same place, immersed them in the river Jamuna, lifted them out, and then showed them the spiritual world. And they saw themselves with Krishna in the spiritual world. They were astonished. So here's the text. Nanda Maharaj and the other convert men felt the greatest happiness when they saw that abode. They were especially amazed to see Krishna there, surrounded by the personified Vedas who were offering him prayers. So the emphasis here is there's a sweetness in loving exchanges with Krishna and Vrindavan. Because of its purity, the preeti or love of the young girls of Gokula is best. However, here is the general description first. This is now Brahma speaking in the Brahma's prayers. O Lord, what can you give to the residents of Braja, whose houses, possessions, friends, dear ones, bodies, sons, life, heirs, and hearts are dedicated only to you, since there's nothing superior to you or Braja, which you have already given? Thinking of this, my mind becomes bewildered. You awarded yourself even to Putana and her family members because she wore the disguise of a nurse. So, Brahma is appreciating the good fortune of the residents of Vrindavan, saying, you gave Putana situation in the spiritual world, what are you going to do for these Brijvasis? They've given everything. How are you going to reciprocate with their love? There it is seen that even the animals have greatest affection. When Krishna entered Kaliya's lake, quote, the cows, bulls, and female calves in great distress called out piteously to Krishna. Fixing their eyes on him, they stood still in fear, shedding tears as if they were humans. When Krishna lay down, Balaram served him with affection. Quoting chapter 17 of this canto, Balaram embraced his infallible brother and laughed. Knowing well the extent of Krishna's potency, out of great feelings of love, Balaram lifted Krishna up on his lap and repeatedly looked at him. The cows, bulls, and female calves also achieved the highest pleasure. Paragraph. Even plants experienced the greatest bliss. And a scriptural reference. Having regained their vital functions, Yashoda, Rohini, Nanda, and all the other cowherd women and men went up to Krishna. Oh, descendant of Kuru, even the dried up trees came back to life. That's at the end of the Kaliya. They were devastated to see Krishna in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, but when he broke free, they were revived. Lord Brahma prays, quote, my greatest possible good fortune would be to take any birth, whatever, in this forest of Gokula, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Lord Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is sought even today by the Upanishads. Paragraph. In Gokula, the ocean of the highest knowledge of Krishna's sweetness, there are anugatas, or obedient followers and relatives. Among the two types of dear persons, the relatives are the greatest because of having intense feelings of possessiveness. For example, again, this is Brahma's prayers. How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd man, and all the other inhabitants of Brajabhumi. There is no limit to their good fortune because Krishna gave them prema, which is the highest bliss, eternal and complete. Paragraph. It is said in this verse that even among the younger people of Braja, Krishna accepts friendship. That is said in praise of friendship. The excellence of Krishna's sakhas, or friends, among the people of Braja is described. Quote, in this way, with an abundance of splendor caused by Krishna, they played with him, who was pure consciousness, known as Brahman for the Gyanis. We read this verse. Who is the Supreme Lord for the devotees with Dasya Bhav, and who was an ordinary human child for those covered by material illusion. In this verse, Satam refers to Gyanis who have realized Brahman. The position of the cowherd friends of Krishna, the Sakhas, was much greater. Those in Dasya realized Krishna as the Supreme Lord, para daivatena. From the sixth canto, oh great sage, greater than those who are jivan mukta, and greater than those who attain liberation, is the devotee of Lord Narayana. Such a devotee who is in shanta or other rasas is very rare, and very rare even among 10 million people. The friends of Krishna, the sakhas, are rarer than even that. Neither the general spiritual form, the form of the Supreme Lord, nor shelter of prema, were not realized at all by persons devoid of knowledge, bhakti, and friendship. Those who took shelter of maya, since they were unequaled for seeing Krishna in those forms, he cannot be attained by them. So people who have spiritual qualification of different descriptions can't accomplish what the friends of Krishna and Braja accomplished. Abhijananti mamudha manushyam tanamashrutam, from Bhagavad Gita. The fools derive me as someone with material form. The first three lines of the verse indicate rareness of seeing the Lord in any form. The cowherd boys directly played with Krishna, who cannot be easily seen, because of having the highest friendship ascending to the excellence of prema. This was astonishing to Shukadeva Goswami. Though he appeared directly as Parabrahman in human form, greater than all other forms ever seen, even to ordinary material people, by his all-pervading mercy, they did not attain bhava as a friend, though they could attain these other realizations. The friends of Krishna played with Krishna as a friend, a form excellent with the bhava of a friend. Thus they alone were best among people who pleased the Lord by doing many pious acts, krita, punya punja. Among types of friends, this type of friendship does not exist. They are greater than all others. Therefore, the good fortune of these friends who played directly with Krishna because of special friendship with intimacy, pranaya, should be described. Let the ordinary among the inhabitants of Braja remain. That is another good fortune. The good fortune of just seeing them is very rare, even for the great sages. To indicate that the next verse says, from the same 12th chapter, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, whose foot dust alone cannot be seen by yogis in samadhi, though they have controlled their minds by severe hardship for many births, is eternally situated here, directly visible to the eyes of the people of Raja. Oh, how can the good fortune of the people of Raja be described? Akrura speaks about that which nourishes the greater good fortune of the friends of Krishna. So Akrura is entering Vrindavan, sent by Kamsa on his chariot, contemplating what he's going to do when he sees Krishna. Then I will at once alight from my chariot and bow down at the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, the Supreme Lords, which yogis contemplate by intense practice in order to attain him. I will also offer my obeisances to the Lord's coward boyfriends and to all the other residents of Vrindavan. Last paragraph. When Brahma stole the calves and boys, Krishna made copies of the boys and calves, but saw that they were not the same as the originals. Thus he himself became the calves and boys. But not being satisfied with them, he later brought the real calves and boys back 1 year later because of attraction for them. Shukadeva speaks this verse. So, the context again is Krishna's childhood pastimes and his encountering Bakasura. It's a nice pastime, the description of how it takes place. And when, let's see, the description we hear is Bakasura was an assistant of Kamsa, and he happened to live in Braja near Nandishwara or Nandagram. And Krishna one day, when taking the calves to a distant place to get water from a lake, this baka was there looking like a mountain. It was really huge. He says it looked like the mountain peak that got chopped off by a thunderbolt. Was standing, and the cowherd boys were looking at this. We've never seen this before. What's this? And Krishna knows, so he starts to come closer. As he comes closer, the big beak of the baka, of the demon, the crane, holds Krishna's mouth. He can't swallow him, because Krishna's body gets bigger and it's very hot. So he spits Krishna's body out. And then he tries with his beak to pierce him. And Krishna finishes him. But when Krishna's inside the beak of Baka, the coward boys faint. Because you're knowing Krishna's protecting them. But what are they going to do to protect Krishna? But we are hearing the intimacy of the coward boys and the intimacy of love of Balaram is such that even he's omniscient. That there's a very strong power of the love of the residents of Vrindavan for the personality of Godhead. In other places also, Devahuti is mentioned, Mother Kapila. Love for the Supreme Lord has a power, and it allows one, on one hand, to understand the divinity, but it's so strong that it covers the divinity and the love factor rules, it predominates, it eclipses the sense of the Lord's divinity. It's the science that's with them, the science of rasa, the science of prema. So these are verses describing how fortunate the cowherd boys are to be with Krishna day in. They not They lose Krishna's association at night. It's described that they can't sleep at night because they're just so anxious to get together with Krishna again the next morning. And then they're banging with their flutes and buffalo horns. Come on, let's go. Herd the cows. Mother Yashoda's decorating Krishna, putting in a new fresh garland and making sure everything's straight. You know how mothers are. And the coward boys are at the doorway. Let's go, let's go. The sun hasn't even come up yet. Because they want to be with Krishna. And Krishna wants to be with them. Because their affection, the intensity of their love for him as friend, Sakya Rasa, it's Arjuna was also Krishna's friend. That was one of the, that was his relationship. Bhaktosi ne sakha cheti. Krishna's sakha and Krishna's bhakta. But the intensity of the love of the residents of Vrindavan as friend, as servant, whatever the rasa is, the parental affection. The parental affection of Nanda and Yashoda are described in comparison particularly to Vasudeva and Devaki. It's super excellent. There's like details and details and details without. The emphasis is the intimacy of love in Vrindavan is, there's nothing to compare to it. There's a verse, I'll just end with this and see if there's some discussion. There's a verse in Brahma Samhita, before he builds the universe, Brahma achieves full realization, God realization, through his tapa and his chanting of mantra and so forth, and he offers prayers to Govinda. And one of those prayers is describing the abode of Goloka, because that's what we're describing. Goloka nami nititami talecha tasha devi maheshahari dhamasutesha tesha. He's Devidam, Maheshdam, Haridam, and Golokadam. The verse describes, there's a hierarchy. Devidam is where we are, the material universe. And beyond the material universe is the abode of Mahesh, Lord Shiva. And beyond the abode of Lord Shiva is Haridam, the abode of Vaikuntha. And beyond the abode of Vaikuntha is Goloka. So we're hearing about the glories of the residents of Goloka when Krishna comes and performs his pastimes on earth. He exhibits those pastimes. And there's, in that hierarchy, in Haridam, everyone is, there's no contamination of the modes of nature, there's no karma, everything is Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness. But there's a sense of the majesty of the Supreme that gets compromised a bit with in Ayodhya because Rama is also Supreme, but he has a mother and father, and Narayana doesn't have mother and father. He has three brothers. Narayana doesn't have three brothers. And so forth. There's the intimacy in Ayodhya, although it's part of Haridam. And beyond Ayodhya is Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. Krishna's abode in the spiritual sky, Krishna Loka. And there's even more intimacy of sweetness, so much so that the sweetness eclipses the majesty. Krishna performs powerful activities, lifting of Govardhan Hill, etc., etc., etc. And the residents of Vrindavan just, they overlook it. We've been having a nice time discussing these topics. What happens after the lifting of Govardhan Hill, and Indra comes, and Airavata performs Abhishek of Krishna with celestial water, and Surabhi comes and performs Abhishek of Krishna with oceans of milk. The residents of Vrindavan are very happy Krishna puts the hill back in place, they go about their duties. But then in the aftermath of all of that, 7 days, Krishna lifting a hill, they start wondering, who is he? And then there's a whole chapter called Wonderful Krishna, where they're in amazement of the majesty of Krishna. And they recite the pastimes of Krishna one after the next, where he exhibited great power. So who is he? So they go to Nandamarsh and say, you're a king. You must know he's your son. Who is he? Is he a this? Is he a that? And Nanda tells them, this is what Gargamuni said during the Namakarana ceremony, name-giving ceremony for Krishna. He said there's 8 verses, and he recites them again. And he said that Gargamuni said that this son of yours will have power like Narayan. He didn't say he's Narayan. Didn't say it wasn't Narayan. He just said he'll have powers like Narayan. With those powers, he'll protect the citizens of Braja. So take good care of this boy. So that was Nandamaraj's answer. He's got powers in Narayan. Because that's what Gargamuni said. So, let's have a festival, because he protected us, and, you know, so they have a festival the next day, just to honor Krishna, to give him different gifts, and sing songs, and their affection is so strong, that they don't get stuck on his divinity. He shows opulence, it's obvious. It's not an ordinary person, but Narayan gave him some powers. Their love is, their affection is such that they don't stay, it doesn't diminish the sweetness of their love, it enhances the sweetness of their love. Our dear Krishna, as a friend, as a child, as a lover, as a master, that's Vrindavan. So tomorrow we'll go back to Bakasura and what happens with him. Let's see if there's some discussion, any thoughts you'd like to share, or topics you'd like to discuss.
No, I'm good right now.
Hare Krishna, Guru Vaishnava. As you are describing...
Can you turn the speaker this way? Yeah.
As you are describing this very beautiful past tense, it felt like literally transported from whatever was happening to a different world. I was just thinking in terms of we cannot forget the other world because we have the responsibilities, family, occupation, whatever stuff. But at the same time, having a connection with this, we should take the strength and apply to the other side. I was bringing this up because we had some long discussion in the Bhagavad Gita introduction. Prabhupada quotes this, forgetting that paramour example we were having, like how in Krishna consciousness, go and do your duties. If you could speak a little bit on that.
Sure. The Bhagavad Gita context of that point you're bringing up is Krishna's instruction to Arjuna, Mam Anusmara, think of me, in Yudhya Cha, Yudhya means fighting, or he Prabhupada translated as performed a prescribed duty. So for Arjuna, his prescribed duty was to be a warrior. And for us, our prescribed duty is not to be a warrior, but whatever our prescribed duty is, to do that. So perform your prescribed duty in a theistic way. And while doing that, in the world, and where's your consciousness? Mam anusmara. So how does that remembrance of Krishna, when we're busy over here, how does that remembrance of Krishna carry on? And it carries on by awakening the natural affection that's dormant in the heart of every living being. You know, a very simple example, or two very simple examples, a mother and their small child. Now, when children grow up and get a little older, a little more able to maintain themselves, a little more independent, still there's affection because they're your child. So, or young boy, young girl, and he's thinking of her and she's thinking of him because there's a natural affection. So while they're brushing their teeth or studying for their exam or doing whatever they're doing, he's thinking of her and she's thinking of him. It's because of that affinity, of that attachment. So that's how the Mam Anusmara happens. It happens because of this, a natural condition of the soul is there's a relationship with the Supreme Soul. There's a relationship with Krishna, specifically. Sarva Shachaham Riddhi Sannivishto. Krishna's in the heart of everyone. Not just people from India. Krishna's in the heart of everyone. He's in the heart of the bird, and he's in the heart of that plant. Over there on the table, he's in the heart of every living entity. And since he's in the heart of every living entity, all living entities are his parts and parcel, he has a natural affection for us. We've just forgotten our natural affection for him. So those processes that waken that natural affection for him, that's how we can be in transcendence while we're performing our duties in the world. It's just, that's what spiritual consciousness is, or the spiritual path is. You don't give up your worldly duties. You just awaken Krishna consciousness in the context of your worldly duties. The awakening of Krishna consciousness is hearing Krishna's message, hearing his pastimes, seeing his deity form, chanting his name. Contact with Krishna awakens remembrance of Krishna. So that's what we do. You're reading about the Gita 2 times a week for half an hour. That's a beginning stage of remembering that which we have forgotten. Who is Krishna and our relationship with him? And the paramour example is, once he and she have some attachment for one another, the woman who has a paramour, she does her duties very carefully. She doesn't want her husband to detect she's got something going on inside. So she does it very diligently. But inside is, when will I get the opportunity to be with my paramour? So that's a worldly example, obviously. But in the world, there's a temporary function that we have at different stages of life. Some of us go to school, some of us get the job, and some of us build the family, and so forth and so on. There's different duties that we have during different stages of life that changes like a kaleidoscope. But something is unchanging within. And that's the affinity and the attachment for what we've forgotten. Our relationship with Krishna is forgotten. So we restore it primarily by the hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam process, that natural attraction, affinity, affection revives. I mean, look at me. I didn't grow up knowing about Krishna, but something happened. just heard about Krishna. Because there's an eternal relationship that's already there. It grew and grew and grew and grew and grew. And that's, so it doesn't have to take this shape. It can take, you know, it can be the shape of a family or a warrior or a doctor or a this or that in terms of duties and occupation and life in the world. But the inside, that's what's important. Theistic conduct is important according to our nature, but more important than being pious and religious is the attention, affinity, attachment for that relationship that we have forgotten with our eternal Father, and acting in that consciousness all the time by hearing and chanting. So keep reading Bhagavad Gita together.
So Guruji, Krishna is everywhere.
Krishna is everywhere, right?
In every living being.
Yes.
Then why do some people land up committing crimes, killing people and all? Because Krishna is there too. I can understand animals because that's a survival. They have to kill the other animals to survive. But as a human being, if Krishna is everywhere in every single soul, then how come some souls land up committing things which are hurtful?
That's a classic question. It's a question I struggled with, just personal. I struggled with it growing up, then I struggled with it again in college. Like, it was, just didn't make sense. I had like this existential dilemma thing going on. But the answer is, people have free will. And free will means you can use it this way, you can use it that way. There's freedom to use it. So you can use, if you have $1 million, you can use it for bad stuff, you can use it for good stuff. There's, when you're given free will, you can use it properly or misuse it. And some people choose to misuse it. So why do people choose to misuse the power that they have, the power of free will, and the power of the human form of life, the intellect and other marshalling resources in the way that human form can do? Because there's free will and can be properly used or misused. And the living entities, according to scripture, the vast majority of living entities are in the spiritual sky. They're nitya siddha living entities, they never come here. But there are living entities that misuse their free will, and here they are. So we also, even unintentionally, we may make mistakes that cause harm for others. What to speak of, do it intentionally, but it's the nature of this place. It's a place for, it's like a prison. Durga, the abode of Durga, is that, because as I mentioned it, Golokanami Nijitami Tale Chitasha Devi Maheshu Haridamasu Teshu Teshu. That this Devi Dham or Durga's abode is likened to a prison for people who are lawbreakers. There's the law of God, and we don't abide by it. There's some rebellion going on inside. We're competitors. We want to be the enjoyer of his prakriti, his nature. And that's our program. And you can do it piously or impiously. But we're trying to be the enjoyers of God's property. And in the spiritual realm, that's not the program. It's how to use the energy of the Supreme Lord in his service. That's it. Our senses are meant for the satisfaction of his senses. That prakriti is meant for the satisfaction of our senses. So when people have that material nature is meant for my satisfaction, they can do hurtful things. Because that's what the game is. Enjoy my senses. And I make the rules. people do really hurtful things. Consciously, willfully, some unintentionally, but you know, it's free will, misuse of free will. That's the answer. There isn't a good reason to misuse free will. It's really dumb. It's self-painful what to speak of others. There's no good reason for it. It's misuse of free will that brings suffering to oneself and to others. So the remedy is training people proper use of free will. And the happiness, the joy that comes from doing that, because that happiness and joy is connecting with the will of the Supreme. That's love. We're rebellious. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata Bhagavad Gita. Living entities take birth in this world, overcome by the dualities of Icha, desire, and dvesha, hate. That is, there's someone in the supreme position, I want that supreme position, Icha. But there's a problem, somebody already occupying it, so there's dvesha. So here we are, taking birth. So there's an original misuse of free will, and then there's subsequent misuses of free will, according to the modes of nature. Good dispassion, ignorance. So the ignorant ones are the kind that you're thinking of, but the other ones are also. The real proper use of free will is not only to connect with the Supreme, but be an instrument that helps other people remember their connection with the Supreme. That's the best friend. Suhrid. Best friend. I made the mistake of reading an article about gun violence in Chicago over the 4th of July weekend. It was a nightmare. It's so out of control. Gangs of kids getting piling out of a car in a neighborhood. They don't know anybody. They just start firing bullets at people. And you hit a 4-year-old girl and she, you know, instantly died. And he got back in the car and drove away. It wasn't to get something. It was just like, who knows? Dark modes of nature. Whew. They're going to a dark place. But people are being hurt in between. And it's in so many, too many. It's not new. It's been going on. This use of free will has been going on. Different colors and different stages of history of mankind. Getting darker though. The mode of ignorance becomes darker and darker in the age of Kali. Shocking. There's some online questions.
Yeah, a couple of questions.
Hare Krishna. So the questions are, Amara Mataji's question. Krishna could have killed Kamsa just after his birth too. Was the main reason that he took 11 years to please the residents of Raja by his pastimes?
Of course.
And this is from Hema Suryavanshi Mataji. Are these cowherd boys eternally live? Do these cowherd boys eternally live with Krishna, or Are they performing Leela now also?
Well, why are they mutual? Those two are not mutually exclusive. Eternally means now also. Okay?
This is Sri Radhika Mataji's question. We have information of how Krishna wound up his pastimes by taking the residents of Dwaraka back to the spiritual realm. Is there any information of how Nanda Baba, Mother Yashoda and other remaining residents of Vrindavan wound up their earthly existence?
Yes. After Krishna killed Shishupal, his dear friend Dantavakra became very angry, and there was a combat between Krishna and Dantavakra, and Krishna defeated Dantavakra. And just after Krishna defeated Dantavakra, it was near the gate of Mathura, and Krishna decided to enter Vrindavan at that point in time. Jiva Goswami makes mention of this from Padma Purana. He accepted the attire of a cowherd. He relinquished his Dwaraka majestic attire and accepted a cowherd boy attire and went to Vrindavan, spent 2 months in Vrindavan. The purpose of his visit was to send three things. The eternal associates that had descended from the spiritual realm to send them back to the spiritual realm. So a Vaikuntha Vimana descended and took them there. Second thing is the unmanifest or aprakat lila, their manifestations entered into the aprakat stage. And then also Krishna went to Dwaraka to conclude the pastimes of the residents of Dwaraka and send them to the spiritual world. So those were the missions or purposes accomplished by Krishna for Nanda and Yashoda to return to their respective positions and the other associates as well. The sum of the persons who had descended were partial incarnations of demigods, and the demigod partial incarnations went back to their abode in the heavenly realm also. That was an instruction Vishnu had given to Brahma: please tell the demigod to take birth on earth before I descend to assist me in my pastimes. So there was partial angsas or partial incarnations of them, and they were sent back to the heavenly abode. Those are the missions what Krishna's visit accomplished.
This question is from Bhakti Priya Mataji from Naperville. I feel connection with Krishna during deity service or when I read Srimad Bhagavatam or Prabhupada Lilamrita. But during other times, I'm not feeling that connection. For example, when chanting his holy name, when cooking for Krishna and other activities, I'm not feeling that connection. Can anarthas be one of the reasons why I don't feel the taste during these activities? And is there any advice on how I can develop that connection?
Well, keep doing those activities with in the intention of pleasing, and because the soul by constitution is an eternal servant of Krishna. And if you're not feeling that, keep doing anyway, because that feeling is there already. It just needs to be awakened. And it can be many reasons besides, you know, due to anarthas. It's just sometimes more focused and sometimes less focused. But our lives are, you know, you have to cook. So your mother, you have children, you're going to cook. So you cook for Krishna. And you just practice it like that. And do the other things that are, you feel that connection, and that connection will spread. Especially important is chanting. The connection with Krishna through chanting. Okay.
This is from Atulya Mataji from Boston. The pastimes of Krishna with his friends looks far out and beyond my reach and understanding, but at the same time, because of spiritual personalities like Srila Prabhupada and his empowered disciples, it feels like that spiritual world is very near to me because of their nearness with Krishna. Is that a correct understanding?
Well, it's your subjective feeling, so it's a correct understanding.
And the next part of the question is then, how to interact with these empowered personalities like Srila Prabhupada's disciples walking around on this earth? It feels like there are spiritual personalities walking amongst us. This has been on my mind in the context of disappearance of His Holiness Bhaktacharya Maharaj and all the glorifications I heard about him.
Well, we have a tendency to become familiar, and when you become familiar, you may not have, you know, the transcendental appreciation may subside in favor of the familiarity. So it's good, just as, you know, as you're describing, hear about the nature of a person and contemplate the good fortune you have to have such persons in your midst. Now, what will happen, for your information, when a great devotee just died, he contracted COVID and was, you know, in critical condition for about 2 weeks and expired. So it's been traumatic for our whole society worldwide. He was a very celebrated person. After some time, you know, it's kind of like after, in New York City, when 9/11 happened, everything was frozen. And then, you know, after a month, 2 months, it started to loosen up and people went back to business as usual. So you can count on the trauma of a loss of a great personality having that fade in time, because time destroys things, and there will be a tendency to business as usual, get back to business as usual. So for you, understanding what you've just shared, take the opportunity to hear and appreciate the spiritual quality of persons who are walking amongst us, or in addition, great personalities from scripture, because they're carrying some shakti, they're carrying some spiritual power, and that's what's going to help us make spiritual progress. Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj are the great personalities of the Bhagavatam, and personalities who are walking amongst us, who are living, you know, a modern life of undivided devotion to Krishna. It's not ordinary. Out of all the people, manushanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam. It's very rare to find someone like that out of all the so many people in the world. It's a very special person, and they should to hold that special in that regard. And then you'll make spiritual progress through their association, because you'll have proper regard. You're a receiver beyond to receive that spiritual shakti that they're providing. Okay.
This question is from Pooja Singh Mataji. We have heard that Lord Chaitanya came to give us the highest gift of Raja Prem, but I understand that advanced devotees can develop particular affection for the other forms of Krishna, example, Lord Rama, where the awe and reverence is present. How can I understand what perfection in our process means in this context? How can I understand what perfection means in our process in this context?
Those devotees that I know that have affinity for Lord Ram or Lord Nrsimhadev or other forms of the Lord Leela avatars, they have a particular attraction for that form of the Lord, and it enhances their particular attraction and affection for Krishna. It doesn't diminish it. So that's my experience. So what does perfection look like? We already described. You have your prescribed duty, and you do that prescribed duty in this world. You don't neglect it, you don't check out, you do your prescribed duties in the world. At the same time, your mind is with Krishna. That's the standard. Whatever the ashram, whatever that's one's psychophysical nature is that determines one's duty, you do that for Krishna. That's our perfection, that's our stage.
This question is from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. How to see a human being in all human beings without their external qualities and actions so that there is natural feeling to share knowledge?
Well, you have to see on the spiritual platform. Pandita Samadarshanam. You have to see on the spiritual platform.
This is from Rupa Vilas Prabhu. Some people ask, why God is he or male? Why not she? I try to calm them down by saying that God has no gender. He can manifest in either gender depending on his choice. He says he is the father, mother and grandsire. So is this answer acceptable?
Yes, absolutely. He's everything. We say he in the sense of Purusha or the energetic, but the energetic is not minus Prakriti. The energetic is the enjoyer of Prakriti. So, but he's everything. So you can say he, she, whatever you like. You can say they, Radha Krishna.
This question is from Amara Mataji, a follow-up. As per the narrations, they were so absorbed in Braja Prema. The cowherd points.
Yes.
Yeah, they were so absorbed in Braja Prema that they would have been satisfied by his presence only. Is the appearance of demons in between orchestrated for worldly people to be able to take shelter of him and all powerful?
Well, there's multiple purposes, that's one. Okay, is that it?
Yes. One question from Sanchari Mataji, text.
This is from Sanchari Mataji. From my understanding, as devotees in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the ultimate mood we can cultivate is the constant desire to remain in the service of Krishna, no matter where we end up at the end of our life. To be in a place where service overwhelms the desire for liberation, or to be in even Vrindavan. How do we reconcile this with the Vrajavasi's intimate need to be constantly with Krishna?
They're attached. They're attached. They're transcendentally attached. Someone was asking a similar question about, on the one hand, a pure devotee. Prabhupada would say, I'm always with Krishna. At the same time, the pure devotee Prabhupada wanted to be in Vrindavan. Particularly wanted to be in Vrindavan, leaving his body. So, because, and so that sounds like a contradiction. So it may sound, similarly, may sound like a contradiction here. The Brijvasis, they just want to be with Krishna. And then a liberated soul, they can be anywhere as long as they get the opportunity to serve Krishna. The opportunity for them, the opportunity to serve Krishna is being with Krishna in Vrindavan, because that's where Krishna is. And they're actually eternally with Krishna in Vrindavan. That's who they are, and that's their attachment. So even if they were somewhere else, they would want to be with Krishna in Vrindavan, because that's who they are. That's their identity. It's not a contradiction. It may appear to be a contradiction. That's their home. That's their eternal home. Like, you know, we have some glimmer of an idea of home where we move around, we go home after we move around. So that's their home. That's their eternal home. So they have that affinity. It may look like a contradiction, but I don't see it as a contradiction. It's their eternal position.
That's it.
Another?
So this is from Rupa Shri Mataji, Rupa Mataji from Naperville. It is said that a living being goes through the cycle of 8.4 million species to take human form of life. It's also said that a strong desire to take a different form or body at the time of death comes true. For example, if I desire to be an actress or a successful businessman, I take that form in the next life. Does that mean that regardless of the deeds or karma, the desire one feels at the time of death takes precedence?
No.
Or?
It's guna and karma, not just desire. Desire is guna. And then there's another balancing factor in karma.
So she has two more parts. So do I go through the cycle of species before that desire gets fulfilled?
Do you understand the question?
So I think her question is, now I have some desire to become a businessman or some successful person next lifetime. So do I go through the 8.4 million species?
No. It's going to encourage you to go directly to what, you know, the next position. Not stop over.
And the follow-up is, how does desire at the time of death and karma work together?
Well, you may desire to be a millionaire, but you may not be your karma. So one balances the other. You know, there has to be an alignment of the two things. It's not only karma. Let's just say, someone's karma is to be an educator, but their guna may be, you know, educate people how to do crime, or their guna may be to educate people how to do good. They interface with one another. Okay. We're done. Anything further? No good.
I'm good, thank you.